now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Yo. Technology. What is it all about?
He created a loop of, I want something, I can't get it, I found a code, I broke it, I got it. No one stopped him, right? No one told him that was wrong. And then he thought, what else can I break? And then he escalates down a path. And his mother actually looked at me and said, I'm really worried that people are going to think he's a criminal. I was like, well, I mean, he is. I mean, that's the problem.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech. This week, we are bringing you a conversation with a startup not in the Valley, but in London. And it is a little off the beaten path because what we're talking about, in fact, is hacking. And specifically, we're looking at how it is that teenagers who are often right on the front lines of this kind of murky world online. And if you step back, it makes sense. So younger generations are really the kind of the first to grow up online. They have a facility and ease of comfort with all things tech. And many will spend hours and hours gaming, for example, where maybe they want to get a skin or some type of digital asset. They can't get it. Their parents won't pay for it. So they go on to an online forum. People are swapping tips about how to kind of break into the game, get various things. You try it out and maybe you get more and more sophisticated. See what else you can break into online. Maybe even start making some money. You get the idea. In any event, teen hacking is a very big deal. So there was a Homeland Security report just last year into Lapsus, which was a group of kind of a loose group of teenagers, young people in their late teens, early 20s, who broke into a bunch of companies, Microsoft, Okta, NVIDIA, a bunch of really sophisticated companies back in 2021, 2022. And Homeland Security wanted to find out how this happened and how it worked. And, you know, from the report, they said, quote, teenagers are compromising well-defended organizations using a creative application of many techniques. And that's just one example, right? You may recall in 2020, another group of teenagers hacked a bunch of prominent Twitter accounts, including Jeff Bezos, to lure people into a crypto scam. And it only took a few hours, but they made six figures from that little stunt. Anyway, it's a problem. And this week's guest has come up with a really interesting way to address it. So Fergus Hay is the founder of something called The Hacking Games. It's a one-year-old London startup that is taking kind of a three-prong approach to try to turn this problem into a business. And the first is through mass media. They're developing a documentary as well as a kind of a Top Chef style television series called The Hacking Games. And this is kind of a hearts and minds approach to change the perception of hacking as this kind of solely nefarious activity, criminal enterprise, into something that actually can be done well and done for good. And then on top of that, they're going to launch a recruitment agency where they can kind of theoretically lure in lots of people who might be, you know, young people who might be otherwise heading down a different path and be like, hey, there's literally millions of unfilled cybersecurity jobs. This is a bigger and bigger issue. You can actually make good money and actually not be a bad guy doing this. And then also they're doing a metaverse platform. Listeners to this program will know I'm not a huge buyer of the whole metaverse thing, but anyway. Anyhow, I thought it was just an interesting idea, and Hay has brought together a really interesting group of folks to kind of bring this idea to life. So he has Hollywood studio heads, cybersecurity professionals, all kind of focused on this goal of taking this teenage hacking problem, this young person hacking problem, and actually changing, kind of flipping the script on it and trying to kind of create a virtue out of it. So that's what we cover. And as I said, it's fun. It's a different kind of story. And if you have kids of gaming age, particularly, it will give you something to think about, because really, do you know what they are doing during all those hours they're playing Roblox or whatever? And more to the point, would you watch the hacking games? Would you watch a television series whose kind of primary, you know, the action, so to speak, is a bunch of kids pecking away at a keyboard? So they've got their challenges, but I think it's a really interesting idea. They've got some real kind of grown-up, serious people involved in the project, and I think you'll enjoy the pod. So here he is, Fergus Hay, the founder and head of The Hacking Games. Enjoy. The Hacking Games, what is it? What's the big idea?
Well, the big idea in The Hacking Games is to equip Generation Z globally to stop the social pandemic that everyone is sleepwalking through globally.
So just before we go, and I know this is probably obvious to most people, but what is Generation Z? When is that a start or ish?
Obviously, it's kind of open to interpretation, yeah. But basically below 30. Right. So 25% of the global workforce is Generation Z.
Gotcha.
Think of it as the kind of digital natives who have grown up naturally in a digital world. It's not like they adopted it and had to learn it. And they are the kind of undergraduates and graduates that will drive our workforce and then ultimately our leadership and our society and our commercial world.
And Generation Z, and then after Generation Z is Generation A. We're just starting at the beginning of the alphabet. Is that how what we're doing?
Somehow we have not creatively broken the cycle. I haven't even gone like capitalized or lowercase.
Right.
So these are youngsters. I mean, they're kind of, you know, eight years up to kind of 15, 16.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, and you know, when we talk about Generation A, you know, that is actually in a way the scariest bit of what we've seen in this world of hacking and cybercrime.
So you mentioned social pandemic. Those are big, scary words. So what are you talking about when you talk about this kind of this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, it was a baseline data point that we came across, which, as someone who's not deep in the cybersecurity space, it is totally startling. So by 2027, $23.8 trillion will be lost in a singular year to cybercrime. That's an unfathomable number. But to put that in context, the GDP of the United States in 2022 was $23 trillion, give or take a dime.
Right.
The global cost of COVID, according to the IMF, over a two-year period was $11 or $12 trillion. So in a singular year, cybercrime will cost the world double what COVID did and the equivalent of the GDP of the United States. So that is an enormous number. So we thought we'd double click into that and say, okay, well, like, what is happening in here? And who are the criminals? Who are the perpetrators of this? And of course, like, you instinctively say, well, it's obviously nation states, state sponsored.
It's North Korea, it's Russia.
Yeah, exactly. And that is true. That is true. And then you go, okay, well, and it's also organized cyber gangs out of South Asia and out of Russia, et cetera. And that is also true. But the startling fact is the infantry people. The vast majority of hands doing the hackers are kids. And the data shows, so there was a research paper by Tuffin in 2022 that they polled 2,000 New York teenagers, and 60% of them had hacked someone by the age of 16.
Right.
And 32% of them had hacked someone by the age of 13. And what blew my mind then was like, whoa, my understanding of a hacker is an outlier of society. It was incredibly smart, often neurodiverse, outlier of the community who was kind of fighting the system, which is true of the origins of the 90s and the 2000s. And that is true. And of course, there's many of those people as well. But what that data shows you is it's now the middle of the curve kids. It's normal kids who, and I'm normal, I mean, in terms of like their intellectual capability. Yeah. They're not the outliers and maths geniuses. They're just kids. In fact, it's my kids. You know, I have a 9-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And they, you know, they can now get access to hacking code through generative AI. You know, it's circulated around the community.
Just to, on that point, I imagine that 60% figure by the age of 16 runs the gamut, right? From like, oh, let me try to guess somebody's password to actually I've got real hacking skills and I can break into somebody's account and steal something from them, whatever it may be. And I guess what I want to draw out there is just the generational difference of growing up on the internet, growing up gaming, and how the lines between, you know, what you do online, it's just, I'm guessing, to younger people, if you are hacking somebody, if you're, you know, stealing some kind of asset or whatever skin on Fortnite, that doesn't feel like a crime. In other words, it's not clear, like you're not walking into the corner store and stealing a bag of chips, for example.
But let's unpick that, right? Because what we decide is right and wrong is informed by the social contract, right? You can go all the way back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the libertarian thinkers about what is permissible and what is not permissible. And the people who lead us there are our parents, our community, our religion, or our political rules that we abide by, our governance. And all of those infrastructures are built for an analog world, for an in real life world.
Yeah.
But this generation don't delineate between in real life and online. It is totally integrated. Right. You know, they are born as digital natives. In fact, you know, this is the first generation who are natural born coders. You know, they're taught coding at school, but they're not taught a code of ethics.
Well, that's what I think is really interesting. So, but I think that same kid, that same 60% cohort you mentioned, they may be totally fine hacking and stealing something online, but they're not going to walk into the corner store and steal anything, right? Because it feels different. And I think that's what's interesting, it seems to me, about that information is like, you know, that it doesn't feel real in the same way as like, oh, if I get caught shoplifting, the police are going to be called.
Well, I'll tell you an anecdote. We've met so many of these hacking community now and the young kids. And there was a kid I met who I have to kind of anonymize it, who lives in a nice family, professional parents, kid, single child, would go to school, come back, and they would go up to their room and he would play on his computer. And mum and dad were a bit anxious that he was playing too much Fortnite. And that probably doesn't set the right example of shooting people. It's, you know, the classic parental concern. But this kid wasn't playing Fortnite. When we met him, this kid had a bank account that he had set up under an alias with double-digit millions of dollars in it.
How does a young teenager, how old is he?
He's 13 now, but started when he was 10.
How does a 10-year-old set up a bank account online?
Well, actually, I mean, that's terrifying, Danny. He actually showed me. So in the dark web, all of your identity is available for sale. I mean, he went on there and he said, right, let's see what we can buy of yours. And, you know, immediately he found my national insurance number. He found my American Social Security number. There was my passport. There was a copy of my driving license, you know. And it was, you know, $5 here, $5 there, $5 here, you know, and you can rapidly put it together. And that is a sign of how the disaggregated system is so far advanced of the organized governance system.
Right. So this kid, just because I think this is a really illustrative point, right? So this kid, obviously, he's a gifted hacker. He could kind of create some kind of adult alias that can set up an online bank account and then put 10 figures of ill-gotten gains and just hold them there as a 10, 11, 12-year-old.
Yeah, and of course, that's not what the system sees. But the insight into that was, how do you get there?
Yeah.
And when I spoke to him, he was like, look, it all starts on gaming platforms. I wanted to break the game. How do I break the game? And he was looking for cheat codes. And it all starts as, you know, he went to mom and dad and said, hey, I want the digital fighter jet. Mom and dad say, I'm not going to give you 5 Robux to buy this on Roblox. It was on Roblox. And so he goes onto the YouTube channel where they all watch Roblox videos and they're all sharing different ways of getting cheat codes. And he gets hold of a cheat code and he breaks the game. And he thought, wow, that was fun. What else can I break? So then he starts to go to break websites. And he starts just breaking websites, finding some malware, bringing down some websites. But what he doesn't realize is that website is a pizza delivery company, or it's a family-owned florist, or it's a, you know, B2B insurance sales company who rely on their web presence for revenue.
And then he ransoms them.
And, you know, the way he described it is like they contacted me because he leaves a digital trail. They contacted me and they started offering me money. So, you know, I started taking it. It was £500, £1,000. It just escalated over time. of course, you know, I don't know if that's the full story, but the narrative is he started looking for cheat codes. He created a loop of, I want something, I can't get it. I found a code, I broke it, I got it. No one stopped him, right? No one told him that was wrong. And then he thought, what else can I break? And then he escalates down a path. And his mother actually looked at me and said, I'm really worried that people are going to think he's a criminal. I was like, well, I mean, he is. I mean, that's the problem. On our advisory board, we have an amazing guy called Stefan Dubin, who is the ex-head of cybercrime in Europol. And he's committed his life to kind of hunting down cyber gangs, particularly targeting kids on gaming platforms. And he said to me this, it is a human nature that if you are not caught or you're not punished and there's no jeopardy for a behavior, humans will just repeat the behavior and they will just assume it's okay. And unfortunately, our social systems, i.e. parents, we might talk to our kids about sex and drugs and maybe cyberbullying, but 99.9% of us are not having the conversation with our kids about hacking and the threats and their behaviors and the ethical behaviors they need to make. So there's no social system around them. The schools are not teaching ethics around coding and hacking at all. Like that's not there. So these kids are running free, like free range chickens. And that is like very, very dangerous. And the final piece I'd say on that, which Stefan has helped us understand, is that everyone gets caught. You cannot avoid leaving a digital footprint.
Well, especially if you're a kid, right? And like you're messing around and doing stupid things and breaking rules. You're not Lex Luthor, you know, a criminal mastermind who's going to cover all his tracks.
Even he got caught. Yeah. But yes, you're right. I mean, that is totally true. But it's quite meaningful, though, because micro actions that you make as a young kid where you don't understand the impact of them can come back and bite you in your 20s when you're pursuing a professional career. And of course, the example of that is Marcus, the hacker who found the kill switch of the WannaCry virus. You know, he was a 18, 19-year-old kid in Cornwall in the UK. This global virus is bringing down national health systems. He finds the kill switch, amazingly celebrated. He's invited to DEF CON to give a speech about how he did it. Incredible. But there, as he's leaving, he gets picked up by the FBI. He thinks they're interviewing him to find out how brilliant he was. But actually, they're interviewing him because they found that he had been involved in some financial data transgression when he was 13, like 9 years ago. And he had to fight a case for a year, 2 years against
right.
him. So the impact for these kids of these micro actions is severe later in life.
It sounds like stepping back, it sounds like what you're talking about here, and then we'll get into the hacking games and what you're doing in terms of a business and kind of a media entity. It sounds like, you know, just this past few days, we had all the tech CEOs testifying in front of Congress, the latest round. But this time it was about online harms to kids. And it was, you know, body imagery and bullying and sexual predation and all this stuff. But it's all part of this. The social contract does not translate when it goes online effectively. And what you're talking about here is like, you know, the kid that's not going to shoplift has no problem hacking into somebody's account and doing some stuff that could come bite him in the ass, so to speak, later in life. And so with that as the backdrop, what is the hacking games? What were you doing before? And why did you decide, okay, I'm going to create this thing from whole cloth and try to address a very big kind of complex problem?
Well, let me tell you what we're doing. And I'll tell you how we came together as a group to do this. So we think there's a massively important job to create a generation of defenders. That's what our mission is. We want to create a generation of defenders who can make the world a safer place and a more creative place. The key part of that is to help inspire Generation Z and ultimately later in life, Generation A, that there is ethical hacking. There is a way of using their creativity and their access to technology with an ethical code around it to do amazing things and reframe it from being perceived as criminal, which is the hoodie, the no face, the matrix in the background, scamming people, which is how the media justifiably represents cybercrime. It's completely fair. But instead show what ethical hacking originally was. The original ethical hackers were brilliant people who looked at things, broke down them into their base level parts, spotted the vulnerabilities, and either repurposed them or made them better. So examples, Tim Berners-Lee, founder of the internet, Elon Musk, and what he's done in the transition to into electric mobility, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, they got the seed capital for Apple by being paid by companies to hack their phone lines.
Yeah.
So these guys are, you know, you've got Marathi, the CTO of
OpenAI.
You know, you've got these incredible people who are leading the world, creating great innovation, them creating great careers for themselves. They are the, if the rock stars of the last 20 years were kind of entrepreneurs who were creating businesses that didn't make profit, the rock stars of the next 20 years are going to be ethical hackers who are using their creativity and technology to solve amazingly big problems. So what we want to do is inspire this generation to realize that there's ethical hacking is aspirational, puts a code of ethics around their skills, and they can do great things. Then we want to coach them and educate them with ethical hacking qualifications, so we get certified, let's get quality on it. And then we want to recruit them into a labor force to fill the labor deficit in the cybersecurity world. And just to give you a point on that, right now there are 4 million people in the global cybersecurity industry, but okay, there are 3.5 million unfilled jobs. So it's a one for one. The talent deficit is obscene. And when you look at the data, you've got these cyber professionals who are trying to keep things safe, companies, communities, yeah, societies. But we saw a data point that 73% of cyber professionals have left their job at least once due to overstress. Because there are way more attackers than there are defenders.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is get this generation to be inspired and reframe hacking to be ethical, to then be trained, and then to be recruited into that labor force. And the way we're doing that is the inspire bit first, is using storytelling. You know, we know that entertainment and media is a fantastically powerful way of getting people to reframe assumptions and consider things in a different way and persuade people to try something. And so we are launching a documentary with the Noah Media Group, which is one of the world's most awarded documentary makers. That'll be aired in 2025. We're launching a reality TV show with 2006 Productions, with a team who are behind Survivor, Britain's Got Talent, X Factor. And we'll be launching a metaverse platform with Improbable, which is one of the leading metaverse platforms in the world, all under the brand of Hacking Games, to provide kids with content that inspires them about the merits of ethical hacking, shows why it's better than a criminal path, and then provide a platform, a digital community where they can get trained in order to get into the labor force.
On the documentary, that seems pretty self-explanatory. The reality TV show, is that basically like Top Chef, but for, you know, young hackers?
Unfortunately, I can't disclose too much, Danny. But it is a competitive format. We will have ethical hackers from around the world competing against each other to get into a justice league of the best ethical hackers in the world. And that's a team that we can put to good use. I can't give you much more than that, but we're really going to celebrate the creativity and the ethical code of ethical hackers and show the positive impact they can have in the world and show them to be the amazing talent and iconic people that we should all respect. And that we think is a really important part of it.
And so you're building that media empire. And at the same time, theoretically, that feeds into kind of an actual business platform as well, a kind of recruitment platform.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we're going to build a workforce, you know, a young generation who are inspired, and then we will train them, and we'll work with big corporate partners that we're onboarding at the moment to train this community, and then give them a pathway into a career in cybersecurity. And by the way, cybersecurity touches all parts of the world. It's not a division. I mean, this podcast right now, we're on a tech platform on Riverside, and you've got to make sure that's secure, and you've got to be secure, and I've got to be secure. So providing a pathway into a world where they can use their skills to make it safer. And clearly, you know, we see great ways of creating valuable entertainment IP. That's not a throwaway. And we also see that there is a really good industry in training people. Brilliant businesses doing that right now. And we also see there's a great way of filling the labor deficit with really high quality talent, which people will value.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What were you doing before this? And like, why, how did you get involved?
So I did my first portion of my career in global advertising and marketing groups. So I had the privilege of working for some of the best in the world. I worked for BBH, WPP, Ogilvy Mather, and an independent company called Legas Delaney out of London. So I did 10 years in America, or just under 10 years in America. And then I was in Hong Kong, Singapore. So I had a real privilege of covering the world and learning a lot. Since then, I've been a venture partner in investment funds and have been an entrepreneur and set up another business. But the way that we came to this was a really good friend of mine, Dan Deer, who's my co-founder, said to me, hey, come to this meeting in Amsterdam. He's in cybersecurity for 24 years. He and his long-term business partner, Aziz Makaroon, have been in the industry for all of their life. So they're really deep inside the industry. And they said, I want you to come and meet some hackers because we think we might want to make a documentary about their story. So I said, sure. So I kind of walked into the room with like zero expectation. I think I probably just had a sandwich and was probably dozy in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And 3 hours later, having been in a room with a bunch of hackers, that most of them were online, a couple in the room, I just walked out with a deep sense of terror. What I'd heard in that room about the scale of the problem, the lack of awareness, I just felt deeply, deeply vulnerable and shocked. And not just for me, but just for everyone. And in particular, for my kids. Because when I learn how young the people are and how innocent they are, and I looked at my own kids' behaviors, you know, there they are, like playing Roblox and Fortnite, and you know, I really kind of was like, wow, I'm nowhere near this. I'm nowhere near what they're being exposed to.
Yeah.
And actually that afternoon I got on a plane from Amsterdam to Zurich, which is actually one of the most beautiful flights you can take. It's over the Alps, stunning scenery, and normally you look over, gaze wistfully and think, God, you know, isn't nature brilliant? But this time I had my head down and I just wrote on my laptop. And I just wrote a kind of 4-page document, which it just spilled out. My God, we've got this social problem. We've got to solve it. We've got a social responsibility as a parent. I really felt that. But at the same time, what an amazing opportunity to build the future labor force and equip them. And my God, there's a great business here. And that document is the cornerstone of what we're doing. You know, a year later,
right.
You know, with all the progress and the production and the people we brought on board, the fundamentals of that document were the same. And so we brought in... Dan and I brought in 3 other co-founders. We've learned as you get older in life just to bring brilliant people in and make things simple. So we're so lucky to have brought in Sandy Kleiman, who was the founder of CAA's corporate division. He is a long-term Hollywood player. He was the EVP at Universal Studios and has been deep in the intersection of entertainment and technology.
He was a producer of The Aviator, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, he'll be the first one to tell you that he was way ahead of everyone on this because he was also deeply involved with the movie Sneakers.
I remember Redford. Sneakers. Yes, yes.
But what I love about Sandy is he really is at the intersection of entertainment and technology. That's what he's been doing for the last 20 years. So Sandy joined as co-founder and the chairman and is our kind of our foot in Hollywood. And then we brought in Oliver Roskill, who's a BAFTA award-winning movie producer. So he came in to run all of our content and entertainment properties. Because in the end, Danny, like, if we don't get this community inspired,
yeah,
we're not going to make a difference. So the entertainment has to be unbelievable. It has to be so magnetic.
You have to kind of cross a chasm, right? Because a lot of hackers are like, you know, anti-establishment, anti-corporate, anti-powers that be. And if you're trying to be like, no, come out of the dark side, I presume you have to have like a really compelling narrative and like a really good brand and something where you're like, actually, this is pretty legit. I'm okay to be associated with this.
That community you're referring to are highly specialized.
Yeah.
Brilliant. They're a very tight community. And they have all of our respect. And we're delighted to have a bunch of them on our advisory group, on our creative council. You'll meet some of them. They are amazing people.
Yeah.
They're not the people we're targeting. These guys are self-generated already. We're targeting the middle of the curve. The middle kids who are accidentally slipping into it.
That 14-year-old who has $10 million dollars in his bank account.
Yeah, I mean, even he is probably on the niche side. It's more like my kids, who, you know, right. I hope they never listen to this, but they're not like STEM geniuses. You know, they're normal kids. You know, they love playing games. They love their friends. They like playing soccer. You know, but they are on Roblox, and they are two or three decisions away from falling down the wrong path.
Right.
And I think we've got to get that middle of the curve. It's like everything in economics. You know, the extremities don't make the difference. It's the middle.
Yeah.
And we've got to get that middle, and we've got to get them to understand an ethical code around the actions they're taking and make sure that they make good decisions. And those good decisions are not just defensive, but they can actually create amazing things. And so I think our entertainment is targeted at the middle, and we will respect and work with the highly specialized hacking community. But, you know, they already have their own momentum.
And then you have a couple other co-founders, you said? So you have the kind of entertainment side.
Yeah, so the entertainment side in Oliver and Sandy. And then we have Dan and Aziz. So they are business partners for the last 24 years. They're entrepreneurs involved in three companies they've exited. They have been an amazing gateway into the community and the kind of amazing advisory board and network of hackers. That we've got is through their respect and access in the network. So it's the intersection of entertainment and the cybersecurity world, which is a critical mix, actually, because what entertainment does really well is it makes mass stories accessible. And what cybersecurity has done really, really well, but to its detriment, is it stayed niche. It stayed very much in the shadows.
Yeah.
But right now, the data shows it's coming out of the shadows at a ground level. So we need to tell this story in a way that's accessible to the middle of the curve. And that's why the know-how of cybersecurity mixed with the storytelling of entertainment will get our message out there and shift the dial.
You say documentary would be coming out in 2025. Where is that in the process currently?
Amazing concept. Director identified. We would be shooting in September to be published the following year. We've worked on it for 7-8 months now with the Noah Media Group, who are an extraordinary organization of documentary makers, and they must be the hottest documentary group in the world at the moment, and it's been a privilege to work with them. So that goes into production shortly, and the TV show is in creative development, and very excited because I got a sneaky peek last week, and that's working with Duncan Gray, who's a very well-respected leader in the TV world, both stateside and the UK side. And we expect to be starting to take that to market in the next couple of months. We've already had pre-interest from networks.
Well, it's interesting. It kind of reminds me, as I was listening to you talk, I was like, you know, when you have like F1 Drive to Survive and there's like, you know, cars going 200 miles an hour and crashes and all that kind of stuff, you're kind of like, I get that. That's kind of really gripping. And then you think a bunch of teenagers pecking away at a keyboard. You're like,
boring
as hell. But at the same time, I will say that poker, for example, is a huge entertainment property. Now, that's different in that it's, you know, there are stakes and betting and bluffing and all that stuff. But it'll be interesting to see how you can kind of find that sweet spot of like, this is not race cars.
I'll tell you my journey on it, because I started exactly where you were. And actually, by the way, that's where Duncan's TV team were. Like, guys, can we really make something out of this? And now they've met all the hackers and heard all the stories. They've gone stratospheric on what we can do with it. But I'll give you an anecdote is the best way to respond to that. So my co-founder's life has been in penetration testing. So that's when a company, let's say big company X, hires a penetration testing company to attack them and see where the vulnerabilities are in their technology space.
These are your cybersecurity co-founders.
Correct, yeah. And they tell this story. So I have to anonymize it for obvious reasons. So in some unknown country, there is a media company that has hired these guys. And so they send three hackers to go to a cafe right opposite the main office. And they sit in the cafe and they fire up their laptops.
They're like Starbucks Wi-Fi.
Exactly. Starbucks Wi-Fi, which you should never click on, by the way. Also, don't ever plug your phone into a USB port on the side of a wall.
Right.
So anyway, they go on there and they fire and they try to crack into the Wi-Fi of the media company. It was a publishing company. And they can't quite crack into it from Starbucks. So they go into the back outside the Starbucks and they spin up a drone to get closer to the antennae on the roof of the building. And they get like 60% the way in, but they still can't quite get in.
Yeah.
So like, okay, so let's observe. And this is the most interesting thing. 82% of cybersecurity breaches involve human elements,
yeah,
not technology. So they watch the building, and this is what they see. They see that two or three times a day, one or two or three different coffee bean companies turn up with coffee beans to replenish the coffee machine. Interesting. The second thing they saw is that every kind of hour and a half, 15 people came out together to have a smoke break.
Yep.
And they would all exit, including the security guard, and then one of them would tap in and they would all go in as a squad.
Right.
And the third thing they saw was that in the parking lot under the building, the barrier was a bit slow coming down.
Yep.
So they observed for a day and they said, okay, right, tomorrow we're going to have a three-point entrance. So one guy turns up with coffee beans and goes, coffee bean delivery. She goes, the receptionist, he or she goes, what floor? And he goes, look, I don't know. I'm just here to deliver some beans. Please don't waste my time. These beans are going to get delivered.
Yeah. These beans aren't going to deliver themselves, lady.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not Jack. It's not a beanstalk. So and she calls different floors. Hey, did anyone order coffee beans? Yeah, I think we ordered coffee. I don't know. Yeah, send them up.
Yeah.
The second person sees the smokers come out and goes and joins the smokers. I don't even know if he did smoke himself. Poor guy. Hopefully he didn't fall down that rabbit warren. But anyway, so he joins the smokers. And, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm contracting for the day. Blah, 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 blah. Cigarette with them. Walks in with the group.
Right.
And then the third guy goes to the raising arm in the parking lot. But he actually messes it up and he doesn't get in.
Right.
But two are in. And they go into the elevator. And whoever presses the button, they go, oh, yeah, I'm going to that floor as well. Great.
Yeah.
They get up onto the floor and then they get to an open desk and they open up their laptop and they are just someone hot desking. 40 minutes later, they have hacked into the editor's personal editing account. They've gone onto the front page of the newspaper and they've changed it to say the secret services of this country have assassinated the American president.
The American president.
Yeah, the American president. They've taken video of it. And then they send it to the client from that company that hired them. And they said it took one day.
Right.
To do something that would have been catastrophic.
Yes.
For the business. But what's interesting about that story is that it's social engineering. It's duplicity. It's physical. It's technical. It's a whole medley of skills that come together. And in particularly the social engineering bit, which is why that 82% of breaches involve human elements is so surprising to those who are not involved. Then you think creatively, oh, wow, well, that is Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And that's what the entertainment guys have really leapt onto.
Got you. That makes sense. I'm curious. I know you guys are, you've been working on this, what, like a year now?
Yeah. January 22.
Talking to companies, I mean, you mentioned cybersecurity companies and millions of open jobs and this idea that a lot of the, you know, probably some very gifted hackers are kids. Untrained, doing bad things, all that kind of stuff. What is your sense of like corporate UK PLC, corporate America, whatever you want to call it, their willingness to be like, actually, this is a great pool of potential workers? Like, you know, kind of bridging that gap between what you're trying to do with that, with the media of kind of bringing this whole middle onto the good side. What is the corporate world? What's the reception there?
Those in the cybersecurity space, what they talk about all the time. So at Davos, the leading big four consulting firms are all talking about the labor deficit in cybersecurity. And that is partly commercial, of course, like more people, more work. It's also like deeply threatening. And, you know, the big corporates are the most vulnerable. They're the ones who are getting hacked every day. You know, we spoke to the CISO of an enormous pharmaceutical company. And he said, I'm just overwhelmed by attacks every day. There are more attackers than there are defenders. And so they are the most vulnerable. They're the people getting attacked all the time. And secondarily, they're the people who need the talent the most. So we have had amazing traction with corporate America, corporate Europe, corporate Britain, of businesses who are in cybersecurity or in technology or in finance, who understand the existentialist threat. And so when they realize that we are building the labor force of the future here, by inspiring this generation and training them in ethical hacking and then providing a pathway, they see a massive problem that they can't solve themselves in the pipeline. So at the moment, you know, they are joining us to help make the entertainment, help attract the community and help to train them. We need more people to join in. It's a collective issue here. It's like a common goal. And, you know, ultimately society and commerce will benefit.
And are you raising venture capital or are you trying to get corporate sponsors at this stage to kind of you know, finance this whole caper?
We haven't seen a need to raise venture capital. You never say no, but we've not gone out to market. And amongst our network, we could, but we haven't. At the moment, we see enough traction with the big corporates to be able to raise the capital to make the entertainment products. And that is through, you know, 3-year corporate partnerships where the corporates get access to the community we're building. They can inform on the training programs. A lot of the corporates have got actually great training programs that just need adjusting or gamifying to suit a younger audience. And of course, you know, there is a CSR desire to be close to an ethical hacking venture where we can make a difference. So right now we're financed through our corporate partners as sponsors and participants. We may well raise. Sandy and I would always say we'd always consider it, but we don't need to at the moment. You know, in the end, when you've got an amazing community, you know, if we're 2 to 3 years out and we've got this kind of highly vibrant, engaged community of young, ethically hacking-minded people, there are so many different ways we can help them achieve their goals, make the world safer. You know, we can spin out, be a venture builder. We can spin out ventures with them. There's for sure the cybersecurity penetration testing business we can make with them. There's definitely a kind of recruitment arm where we can identify and profile the ones with the right skills and then find them jobs in the industry. So there's an awful lot we can do with that cohort. And probably most foundationally important of all of it would be to work with that cohort and let them develop an ethical code that they own. The greatest mistake would be for a bunch of kind of middle-aged people to try to define an ethical code for this generation. You know, I think they have to take ownership of it. And that's something we are really committed to. We will set up the Hacking Games Foundation, which will be a nonprofit, to work with the community to develop an ethical code. And we definitely will need government support and corporate support to do that. That is a long journey, I think. I mean, if you really think, how many codes of ethics are really adopted? You know, like the Ten Commandments, you know, maybe. You
know, debatable.
The Quran, maybe. You know, like that. It is hard to get ethical codes adopted. But we think we can't be the ambassadors and catalysts of creating an ethical coding generation, ethical hacking generation, without getting that code lobbied into governments, into schools, and ultimately it's around the family dinner table. And that is the role of the foundation.
Speaking of middle age, can I ask how old are you?
I'm 42. Is that technically middle age, by the way?
I don't know. I'm 46.
Like, where are we on that, right?
I'm 46, so I'm still mentally in my 20s. So, you know.
Back to your longevity podcast. I mean, basically, I think I'm still an infant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Have you ever done a startup before?
We set up a company just after COVID, which is an Elysian Fields business. So I set that up. I sit on 3 different funds, advisory boards as a venture partner, where we invest in technology businesses. This will be my second startup. It'll be definitely my first startup in the cybersecurity. It's really hard to say cybersecurity.
Media, entertainment.
Labor force. It's such a big problem. It has to be multifaceted. But, you know, it's amazing to feel like you're in the hot seat with a sense of responsibility of creating something that is going to make a really positive impact on a generation and positively impact the world, but also be a fantastic business. And I feel like privilege, but also it really is a burden of responsibility to get this right.
Well, it's interesting also, having spoken to a lot of people in cybersecurity over the years, especially including on this podcast, one of the things I hadn't fully appreciated, which when you hear it, you're like, oh, of course, is that a lot of the hacks happen and we never know about it. You know, a lot of the companies will get that dreaded message of, you know, we've got your data, we've got your information, our ransom is X, pay it or you're screwed. And a lot of companies just pay it, which is why it's such a, I think, a bigger problem than people realize. And on the same way, on the hacking side, it's a lot of it is just kind of happening in the background and not a lot of people talk about it. So it's kind of this invisible problem, or the scale of the problem is invisible.
Insidious. It's insidious. And that's why we talk about the social pandemic that everyone's sleepwalking through. In fact, IBM published a report where they said, on average, it takes 1 year to identify a breach.
Right.
1 year. I mean, and in fact, there was another set of data, I can't remember the source, but I can send it to you, that said like 82% of CISOs say they won't be hacked in the next 12 months or breached in the next 12 months. Yet 75% of companies have been breached in the last 24 months. So those two data points just don't sit.
Everybody's screwed except me.
Yeah, exactly. But it is, I mean, look, it's virulent. And of course, it's very personal. I mean, a close family member of mine was socially engineered out of their life savings last year. That becomes very, very personal. You know, there's big corporate hacks, and in a way, no one has sympathy for the big corporates until you understand how the money all trickles down into people's pensions and their job and livelihoods. But when you have people you know who are socially engineered out of life savings, that becomes really, really painful. And there's no recourse. Bless the policing system, but they are absolutely not equipped to handle this volume. And they don't have the software and they don't have the talent. And so where do you go? You know, what's the recourse? So we are definitely at a tipping point. We saw some interesting data about the gaming being the environment that it happens on. 7 million people were attacked in 2022 on gaming platforms. 7 million.
Yeah. And I imagine that goes from like, I want your Fortnite skin or whatever to, you know, all the way on down the line. And have you signed a deal with a streamer for the hacking games, like the TV series?
With a distribution platform?
Yeah.
No, we had a bid before we'd even come up with an idea, which we were thrilled that there was so much traction, but then we thought we would be in a stronger position to develop the idea, which we've now got. We will go out to market in about 2 months' time. I must say our early tests of the platforms is there's a huge appetite for it. But the question is exactly the question you've asked, which is please show me that it's engaging.
Yeah.
And that there's jeopardy and it's thrilling to watch. You know, there is a question, by the way, is a streamer even the right platform?
Right.
There was a movie I saw the other day. I didn't see it. I saw it being noted that it was launched in 180 TikToks. So they broke the movie down into 180 90-second mini clips.
That sounds terrible. I know I'm just old, but that just sounds
imagine
terrible.
The arthritis in your thumb.
No, I know.
but that is interesting. You know, the audience, young audience, just look at your own kids or my kids. Like, where are they absorbing their content?
YouTube. You know? YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, right? So YouTube, if you're listening, Danny says you'll take the call. But, you know, the way we see it, Danny, is, you know, we see this as a big franchise. So we see multi-market, multi-season TV show. We expect to be doing a documentary every 18 months. There's a scripted show and a scripted movie in the pipeline. The really interesting play is the partnership with Improbable. I think they're the world's leading infrastructure for the metaverse environments. They raised $800 million, SoftBank, Andreessen Horowitz, and Herman Narula, who's one of the three co-founders, has been a great sparring partner on this. And ultimately, you know, their digital worlds are highly immersive, extremely great gaming environments. And ultimately, we want to create that for the hacking game so that the kids can be in the environment they're native to. They can watch the content. They can do Ask Me Anythings with the ethical hackers. They can join tribes, they can play scenarios, they can play games, they can go through the ethical hacking training qualifications and be in an environment that is really native to them. And we think that's really the epicenter of where they're going to gather. And of course, for corporate partners, that's where they can do career events, show and tells, they can host lots of training programs, they can recruit off that platform. And so integrating mass entertainment with digital worlds hasn't really been done yet. It's just starting to start with some sports franchises. And we think that's going to be a really important part of it.
Got you. Cool. I wish you luck. I look forward to seeing how your partners bring this, a bunch of dudes pecking away at a keyboard, bringing that to life. But I'm sure if poker can turn into a global phenomenon, I'm sure you can, there's plenty of ways to do that in this case as well.
Well, listen, Danny, thank you so much. You know, it's this one's a calling. This is a life mission, this project. And we need help. So if there are big tech, cybersecurity firms who believe in the mission of creating more defenders than there are attackers, you're welcome to come and join us, join our corporate partnership program. Let's pool our resources and make a big impact to create a labor force that is equipped to make the world safer and better.
Amen. Well, good luck.
Thanks, Danny.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Fergus for taking the time. I want to thank you all for listening, for the ratings, for the reviews, for telling your friends, for telling your neighbors about this podcast. I will be writing in the paper this week. I actually did a piece last week on the hacking game. So if you missed that, do check that out at thetimes.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at Danny Fortson. And I'll be back next week with another fantabulous pod for you. So thank you again for listening, and we'll speak very soon. Bye-bye.
now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.